Twin baby boys from Germany were the talk of the world in 1987, as was the American neurosurgeon who led the successful operation to separate the twin boys who were born conjoined at the head. Dr. Ben Carson's accomplishment instantly propelled him into the spotlight as something of a miracle worker. I met him 3 years later. Dr. Ben Carson was still just 38 when we talked in the spring of 1990 about his best-selling book called Gifted Hands.
When you have someone's skull open and there is a brain, a human brain in front of you, and you can touch it and you can cut it and you can take parts of it away, what goes through your mind? What are you thinking about when you're holding literally a person's life in your hands?
Well, it's an awe-inspiring situation, because you look at that brain, or you look into the depth of that brain, and you realize that this is the substance that gives that person their being, that gives them their personality, and it's been entrusted to your hands, to your judgment. And you approach that with a great deal of trepidation, not fear, but with tremendous respect. And it is not a thing that I have ever gotten over. Every time I look at it, it still is an awe-inspiring situation for me, and I think it will forever be. I feel very privileged to have the opportunity to take a part in bringing healing to a person's brain and therefore to a person's being.
Is there anything at all that bothers you now about being very well known for the Binder twins? Did I pronounce that, by the way? Is it Binder or Binder?
It's Binder.
Binder, okay.
The easy way to remember, they caused us so many problems postoperatively, we call them the mind benders.
Let's face it, if tragedy were to happen and you were to die today, your obituary would read, Dr. Ben Carson, the surgeon who separated the Binder twins. That's what you're famous for.
Sure.
Does that in any way, is there anything about that that bothers you?
Not particularly. Even though most people know me for that, certainly there were UPI and AP articles and national television broadcasts before that time that featured me. But the thing that really brought it into focus was the Binder twins, because that's when people started saying, isn't that the same guy? Isn't that the guy who did this? Isn't that the guy? And all of a sudden, this tag of miracle worker and all these things started being applied to me, which, of course, is absolutely not true. There's no way that I can work a miracle. I feel exceedingly privileged to work in the environment where I do, to have the position that I do, because at a place like Hopkins, you have so many superstars working along beside you, that almost anything you do is going to be successful. And I just happen to be in the right place at the right time doing the right things.
Boy, it reminds you how fragile your knowledge is when, and what you think you know so securely going in, and you get in there and there's something completely different.
Absolutely. And then you find yourself not flying by the seat of your pants, but certainly pulling out all the stops and using every bit of knowledge that you've ever accumulated.
What prevents you in that situation from just panicking? I mean, when I used to take my car apart and I found something in the carburetor that I didn't intend to find, I would just lose it. Here you've got two tiny lives in your hands,
sure,
and you find something major that you hadn't expected to find. What keeps you from panicking?
Faith in God, confidence in oneself, confidence in one's colleagues. We had planned this thing for 5 months. We had contingencies that you can't even imagine.
And dress rehearsals, too.
That's right. And I just felt that whatever came up, we would be capable of dealing with it. Also, I had by my side my mentor, Dr. Donlin Long, who for years had instilled in me confidence. And I'd never seen him panic under any circumstance. And with the two of us there working together, I felt that we were going to be able to deal with whatever situation arose.
Well, with this, as you said a moment ago, this label now of miracle worker attached, is it painful to you when you have to tell people who phone and ask if you've got an opening in your surgical schedule, and, gee, no, I'm booked solid?
It is very painful. Fortunately, I probably have the world's best secretary, Pat Brothers, and the world's best physician's assistant, Carol James, working with me. And that allows me to get a lot more accomplished than I normally would. But it still requires a lot of all of our time dealing with people who expect some type of miracle to be performed. We review a tremendous number of records. It's heartrending when you have to tell people that there is no surgery, there is no anything that is going to restore your child. And they come to you sort of as the last resort, and I have to tell them that I do not work miracles. I said, only God works miracles, and that's where you ought to be going, not to me. If there is something that is surgically amenable, I will certainly attempt to do it if it looks reasonable after I've made the appropriate consultations and studied the situation.
You've read a lot of autobiographies, I'm sure, that relegate the childhood or the growing up years, the high school, college years, to a couple of pages at the front of the book. But more than half of your book tells about your growing up years, your high school, takes us through college.
Yes.
I was several hours into the book before you even got into medical school. Why is there such a concentration on the early part of your life?
Well, I think it's very important because I would hope that a lot of people could identify with the things that I went through in the early part of my life. There are many disadvantageous situations. And the point is that one has to take all those things in stride and not allow those things to serve as excuses to keep one from achieving. This is America, and I think that's been lost upon a lot of people in the last few decades. This is still a land of opportunity where a person can make their own way if they want to. If they really want to put forth the effort, and there's very little that can stop you, regardless of whether you're from a single-parent home, whether you're from an adverse economic situation, whether you're from a racial minority, it doesn't matter what the situation is if you have the determination and the drive and confidence in yourself. And the confidence in my case comes from a lasting relationship with God.
What kept you from falling into a life of crime, for one thing, early on? What kept you in school? What was the rock in your life?
Well, you know, I certainly had many opportunities to fall into the wrong crowd, and in a few cases I did. But fortunately, I was able to regain my direction, largely through the efforts of my mother, who had a vision. She had a vision that both of her sons would be successful, regardless of the fact that she had only had a third grade education and was a single parent and was working in people's homes, trying to make ends meet. And she convinced us that we could be successful, no matter what blows life dealt, that we could be successful. And all we had to do was take advantage of our God-given intellect and try to remain true to the principles that we had been taught as children, and that is to honor God and to be good to your fellow man. And I think if you can make those your principles in life rather than the gaining of material things, rather than the indulgence in all types of pleasures, and if you can make it your goal to improve the lot of mankind and at the same time develop your intellectual potential, then you will be successful, period.
I noticed I don't think you mentioned money in your book at all, other than the couple of times you found a $10 bill on the sidewalk or something like that. Your mother taught you, didn't she, that having dignity doesn't depend on how much money you make.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I confess that, you know, as a neurosurgeon, I make a good living. I don't think that's something
nobody
I have
would begrudge
to confess,
you that.
You know? But certainly, you know, making money has not been my goal in life, and I've certainly had plenty of opportunities to do that. But I think that the more important thing that I can do, in addition to the medical work, is to try to get young people to recognize the potential that they have.
You know, I couldn't help when I was reading about your experiences in high school that we've heard today about so many black students who feel that there's something wrong with doing well academically, that they have to, that they're being white if they do well academically. And
yes, this is a tremendous fallacy that is perpetrated upon youngsters coming up. There's nothing white about knowledge. You know, you can go back, even if you want to only talk about black knowledge, you can go back and look at some of the things that occurred in some of the older civilizations in Africa and Egypt, and look at the tremendous knowledge that was gained there. I think anyone who says knowledge is white is stupid. And I think that a person who wants to only affect one small area needs only to know one small thing. But a person who wants to have influence outside of the area in which they were born needs obviously to be knowledgeable about the things outside of that area. And no one should expect anyone else to listen to them if they don't have knowledge that is generally applicable.
I had to ask something else. Weren't you a little nervous? I mean, let's put it this way. If I were a pre-med student and I were working this summer at Chrysler putting fenders on, weren't you worried that somewhere along the line somebody's going to swing a fender out the wrong way and it's going to crush your hands and there goes your career?
Well, at the time that I was working on the factory, I was still in college, and I hadn't more or less come to conceptualize myself as a neurosurgeon at that point. So I wasn't all that concerned about my hands, whereas now you can't get my hands anywhere near something that's dangerous.
Change a tire, no.
Forget it.
Well, you know, I shuddered, though. I mean, to think, you know, what we know now about what you can do with your hands, and then thinking, imagining you with grease all over them, you know, putting fenders on cars.
Well, I know some of my colleagues who will mess around with power tools and chainsaws and things of that nature, but the way I look at it, most of the people who are injured by those things are experts with them. Therefore, I'm certainly not going to play with them.
Dr. Carson retired from the practice of medicine in 2013, ran for president in 2016, and in 2017 became Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Donald Trump. I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.